Welcome to the Urchin Studios podcast. Matt's texting.
Are we actually started?
Balls.
Where are my headphones?
Get your things. Get yourself.
I'm texting.
Get yourself sorted out. Get yourself.
Do you know what?
We'll do that again.
I've got a session starting today.
I've got
a vocal session starting at 10 a.m.
Mate, we all got a session at 10, right?
Yeah, but I've got. I won't go into the details of it, but I've got a vocal. I've got an hour with a vocalist.
Yeah,
to do a vocal between 10 to 11. Right, so that's bad on several levels. It's bad because doing vocals at 10 in the morning, bad. It's bad because putting a time limit on a vocalist.
Yeah.
Bad. I think maybe it'd be good, I don't know.
Well, he is...
The person he's singing some, is he's a got, bad motherfucker.
He is a bad motherfucker.
Right, I'm
think he's in that Spanish band called Gorillas, isn't he? Gorillas.
Okay. How are you, Dad? I've got a confession to make first.
Will you start the timer, please?
The timer started.
Started.
Okay, I'm going to start with a confession.
Welcome to Confession Corner. By the way, if anyone wants to write in with... Why is my mic so high? If anyone wants to write in with a confession, we'd...
I don't like the way my mic is. Okay, I'm coming. I'm going to confess first. Which, Dan knows what this confession is, but I don't know. I feel like I just need to get it out there.
Something to do with...
So we had two SM7s, right? In the studio.
Once upon a time. Yeah.
One of them was... I think I bought it, but it was technically a floating... they were both floating SM7s.
Yeah.
Studio SM7s.
Well, it was your one, wasn't it?
It was my one. But
it was your one.
I am very generous with my mics.
He is, yeah. As is the studio.
As is the studio. So one of the SM7s went missing.
It did.
And in my head...
It's quite a while ago. About 6 months, at least.
At least, maybe more. And in my head, the last person that borrowed it, in my head, I thought, well, they're not nicked it. But it's ended up in their studio under a pile of leads, or it's just buried somewhere. So in my mind, I need to apologize to that person because I thought, they've just kind of commandeered it.
Yeah.
It was behind my piano.
It was behind. It was in a musical sense, it was under a pile of leaves.
It was under a pile of leads under my piano. And basically, I was away over the weekend and Dan needed something from my room. And I was like, yeah, sure. Just go in my room and get it. Dan's got a master key. He went in and got it, looked behind the piano, and I feel like such a dick.
Well, I didn't find what I was looking for, but...
You found the SM7, though. Is this what I'm using now?
Yeah. I think that is yours, theirs. Yeah.
Okay. How are you doing, Dan?
I'm good.
Dan's been engineering this week.
Yeah.
For quite a big band.
Yeah.
It's quite exciting. We can't talk about it.
We can't say who.
Yeah. A lot of... I went in... I've just gone into Studio A where Dan's been.
Ooh.
It's one of those 14 DI boxes and every lead situation set up, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Thanks. Shout out to Toby, one of our tenants, who let me borrow some guitar leads. They're ready for return now.
But... It's a cool setup, though. Like it looks great.
Yeah, there is mucho synths. I think it's about seven. There's two drum machines. And four,
dude, is there a stereo DI on every one of those?
There's a stereo DI on everything that has a stereo output. Yeah, so the the Prophet 10, I think it is. That's a mono synth.
Yeah, and the Moog, the Sub 37.
Sub 37. Yeah, I think the Sub 37 is the villain of the week. By the way,
why
already?
Well, I'm going to defend the Sub 37 because it's my favorite synth.
Okay.
Actually, it's the only one
describe
I know.
Describe the process by which you sync it to an external MIDI source.
It's quite easy.
Is it though? Because it's not very doing it.
When you say external MIDI source, you mean to send MIDI to it?
Yeah, from a drum machine. So MIDI, drum machine, MIDI cable.
But I would say in defense of Moog, who are great.
Yeah.
To send MIDI to it.
Yeah.
You just plug the MIDI cable in and send MIDI to it.
No, doesn't work. It's not working.
But from Pro Tools.
Yeah, that's the USB cable, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that not working?
Well, that's not what we need to sync it to.
Oh, well, then that's your fucking problem.
Well, I think in the world of analog synths, which it is, you sort of want your analog synths to talk to each other, you know?
Yeah.
And most of them, you take the lead from here, plug it in there, press the sync button, and off you trot.
See, can I just...
The sub 37 is a labyrinth of sub menus that go deep into the mines of Moria.
Yeah.
But of course, you've only got about a 3-pixel screen to access that the parameters.
I've always been... just to give listeners a bit of context here, Dan is like the gear whisperer in that I often have problems with gear, particularly if I've got a new piece of gear. Whereas Dan, you just seem to sort of plug things to each other and they just work.
Well, I think certainly when it comes to the software side, we've had occasions where there's been a problem and I've just walked into the room.
Literally, I would say more than one occasion. I was trying to get some preamps to work literally a couple of weeks ago, and I can get this one. Dan literally walks into the room and they fucking started working, which makes me. I feel it diminishes my technical abilities.
No, was that the Big Bears? These are, to be fair, they're prototypes. They also belong to Andrew Hunt. Shout out, Andrew Hunt.
You're not getting those back.
Wait, he hasn't got a 500 series rack, so they're just here. Anytime you want them, come and get them. But yeah, the buttons, because it's a prototype, the buttons are a little bit sticky.
Yeah. And that's happened a lot of times, particularly when we first got the Trident. I'd be struggling with it and you just come in and it would just sort of start. Anyway, whatever. Listen, what are we going to talk about this week? What topics are there, Dan?
Do you know, I saw this morning, the author, Neil Gaiman.
I'm a big fan.
He's a big fan. I saw a clip on social media, not a new one because I've seen it before, but he's just, I think he's at a kind of Q&A or something. And someone says, how different is your first draft to the final draft, right? And his response was, first of all, good question. And he read the question back, which is good media training, you know? Yeah. and so what he says is, it's the same apart from all the things that are different. That's not my point.
That's such a non-answer.
Yeah, but then he elaborates. And what he says is, the thing that sort of struck me from a musical point of view is he says, when I'm writing a new book, I do my first draft on pen and paper. I don't want to use a laptop because someone might send me an email.
Yeah.
It might be low on battery. The notifications might pop up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All that shit.
If I need to look up a word, I will use, I'll use Google, and then before I know it, 4 hours later, I'm in an eBay auction.
Yeah, sure.
So,
yeah.
And then after he's done his first draft, he sort of goes to, he will then sort of he doesn't say this explicitly, but I got this sense of him just writing, and anything you want to change, you've got to cross it out. So you're probably just going to, unless you've just written something you hate, you're going to keep going.
What's the musical analogy you're heading towards here, Dan?
Well, I think it's...
Work on tape.
I think there's... Well, I think the first draft is kind of like, it's sort of writing the song, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it struck me that there's quite a song...
It's quite a song.
Quite a strong sense of like flow state in what he's talking about. You know, like not worrying about... Like understanding this is the first draft. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't really talk about that so much when we're making music. We don't sort of, this is the first draft.
The equivalent of that, I guess, for me, is when you're in a writing session and you don't record anything.
Mm-hmm.
You've just got voice notes on a phone.
Yeah.
And then someone else has got a phone with notes. And it's doing the lyrics,
right?
And then someone else is at the piano, and you write the song before you go into Tools,
Pro Tools,
or into your DAW.
Yeah,
I gotta say, that's my favorite way of writing.
Yeah, I think that's quite equivalent, isn't it?
I think so. Something I really don't like in writing sessions is that where you're jamming or top lining over a beat. Or a set of chords that's just on loop. Yeah. I fucking hate that. And I'm not saying that's not a legitimate way of writing, but because I know some people do that and get great results. But to me, it's very rigid. You can't change anything. You can't change the BPM. You're really tied to that thing.
Well, you certainly can't impress yours.
Certainly kind of pretty.
So
tools.
That's definitely a plus.
Or
plus
I might want to
for...
change. You might want to change a chord.
Yeah. I think that's the thing, isn't it?
And it narrows your possibilities at that point. If we're talking about first draft, I like writing. This is just literally about ideas.
Yeah,
and we can go wherever we want with this.
Mm. And I think as well, you're not when you're just listening to a recorded loop, you're not going to accidentally jump off somewhere else by like what me as a very clumsy musician.
Yeah,
you know, if I'm trying to like, not that I'm in writing sessions that much, but when I am, if I'm, you know, particularly if I'm like playing piano or something, and I'm like half concentrating on something else, and I'll just fluff or fudge something,
yeah,
in the wrong place,
yeah,
and that's you know, that's what Bob Ross used to call a happy little accident. Sometimes it's horrible.
Also, but I've had a few artists say to me that they go into writing sessions and all they see is the producer's back because the producer's just in the DAW.
Yeah.
And as a collaborator in the writing session, you kind of want to be in a circle. You don't want to have your back to the artist.
Yeah, I completely agree. And that's kind of what, like, in my head, that's part of what makes, I mean, there's a lot of things that make our Studio C a great space to write in.
Let's sell Studio C now.
Let's sell Studio, well, it doesn't need to go and look at it.
Pretty
busy.
Come
around and see it. it's a happy, but aside from the spacious studio.
An abundance of natural light.
An abundance of natural light, like you've never seen before in a studio. The gear is kind of pushed off to one end.
And doesn't work. No, it does work. I'm joking.
Yeah. And, well, it's... although, that in some senses, that really pushes the producer into the corner. But I feel it actually also sort of forces them to turn and look at what's going on in the space.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Can I ask a question?
Mm.
I'm going to change the subject now. You've got to be after you want to say this.
We might come back to it.
Is there a DAW, not a DAW, is there a system of recording where essentially the interface is just a big iPad and the faders and stuff are on there?
Mm-hmm.
Does that exist? A screen,
yeah.
That's a touch screen.
Yeah.
And you do everything by swiping, by interacting with the touch screen.
I don't quite know about sort of the gesture you were just making.
So yeah,
which sort of seemed a bit kind of Minority Report.
Yeah, that would be ideal.
Yeah. So you've got the, I think it's called the Slate Raven, which is quite an old now touch screen interface for Pro Tools. So it turns Pro Tools into a kind of a touch screen interface.
Well, that sounds ideal.
And it's got a lot of, there's a lot of macros in there. So you sort of like cut, paste. No. Also, you can obviously define shortcuts and little processes and such like. You can also run...
I want to use that because I'm just thinking, wouldn't that be, you know, a lot of the old guard say everyone's just on a mouse and looking at the screen, which is relevant. So could you essentially go back to the ergonomic way of working in the 70s and 80s, where essentially a control surface becomes a sort of virtual board. And wouldn't that be good? Would that be good? In my head, that's like, can someone invent that, please? Because that sounds great.
Well, it's still got a screen, isn't it?
Yeah, but the screen is not there, right? It's not by your eye level. It's down where the desk would be.
Yeah.
So
the artist can't see it.
So the artist can't see
it. But that is good.
So the artist can't pick up your tricks.
That is, no, it's good.
But then your eye focus is, I don't know.
I mean, it's good.
In my head, that sounds like the answer to all my hopes and prayers. But maybe it's not.
I mean, it is nice when I think too often when you've got, this isn't completely detached from what Neil Gaiman was talking about actually, because it's a multi-purpose, you know, a laptop is a multi-purpose computer, and you can check your emails, or you can often, like when I'm working, I'm sat there both hand, like one hand on keyboard, one hand on mouse, and I'm poised any moment while listening to fiddle with something or go like, I could just tweet this, just tweet that. So I, certainly when I'm mixing, and also when tracking as well, I do try and get up, like stand up, because it switches your kind of the way that you're engaging with music a little bit.
Totally.
It's good, you know, it's good to stand up sometimes, obviously. Good for the back.
Yes,
body.
But also the system that I'm proposing, the big iPad, that's better for you than just mousing. So you could do vocal rides, and any automation is suddenly much more gesture.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know how much of your time mixing do you spend doing a rides, like fader ride type things?
Not that much, but that's because the sort of mousy element to Pro Tools doesn't really allow for that.
Yeah, okay.
Whereas you could be much more, so I've got my...
Tactile.
I've got my fingers in fade position. You know, you could sort of, you know...
Let me just describe, Matt appears to be holding 8 faders. With about a gap of about 6 faders in between.
But
it's just pushing it all up, because that's all mixing is, just big, turning up the faders.
The big control surface would, I guess, encourage that kind of interaction.
Yeah.
I mean, the music.
Well, there's totally iPad apps. There's been iPad apps for ages. There's actually, I think it's called Pro Control. That sounds like an Avid product, Pro Control.
Because when we first started Urchin, Dan, we had this thing called a Command 8, which was a physical control surface.
Yeah.
And we used
it. It's in the cupboard behind you.
I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
And we used it for transport.
Yeah.
I got quite good at it. And I would say, 50% of my interaction with the DAW was through that. And it was quite nice.
It is. I mean, I've got to say, we've got twice the number of faders now in Studio A.
But they're not automated.
How are they not automated?
Oh, yeah, we've got the SSL matrix.
Yeah. I've got to say, I don't...
I'm not using it.
Not using it a whole lot. Occasionally.
Okay. That's because I've had a decade of mousing now.
Yeah.
So I'm just used to doing that.
Yeah. I mean, I was looking the other day, like, I was sort of thinking, should I get a little iPad with them? Because there's all sorts of ways to interact. If you are feeling a bit, mousy, then...
Moused out, Dan.
He's a bit moused out.
Yeah. I'm just used to it now. I don't think about it because my way of interacting with the music now, other than using my brain and my imagination, is through the mouse.
I've got to say, like, personally, I'm fairly used to now, if I want to do a fader ride, I do tend to just throw a fader into latch on or touch or whatever. And Pro Tools, and just do it on the mouse.
Me too. That's how I.
That feels not massively dissimilar to the riding an actual fader.
No, it is totally different.
Well, it's practice, though, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I'm quite good at latching now.
Yeah, it depends on how much sort of precision you've got in your mousing hand, you know. But
yeah.
But for me, that's. I mean, what I was getting at was actually, when you're sat there with the ability to change stuff, your engagement with the music's slightly different because you can change it. You don't listen as a listener, and I think that's really important. When
let's unpack that. You don't listen as a listener.
You don't listen as a listener. Let me rephrase that into something that's a bit more descriptive.
No, but I think I know what you mean.
You don't listen as an audience member. How about that?
Yes.
As a kind of consumer, if you like. Let's call it audience member, because that's a bit less, you know.
Consumer.
That's a bit more, you know. Consumer, because you've bought and paid for it. So, like, I like to, if I've got the artist in the room with me, and I see see producers, engineers online, even like there was an Andrew Shep's interview I saw the other day. It's like, oh, the artist is almost never there, you know.
And he actually but that's when he's mixing, right?
Yeah, but he sort of likes to be in. He kind of likes to have it all done, and then the artist comes in and does an hour's tweaks or something
for mixing.
Yeah,
yeah.
For me, that's a little bit late because I kind of want to know whether.
I guess, but hang on. So I guess that just depends what state the mix arrives in.
Yeah, of course. And if you've worked on the production as well, you know much better what the vision is. You know? But I kind of want to I want to get all the sounds up, and then I want the artist to have a listen. And when I do that listen, what my point was is that. At that point when it's like, take a listen, I get up out of my chair, sit the artist in the listening position.
In the big chair.
Yeah, in the big chair. In the boss chair.
Do you need to go, Dan?
I think our 10 o'clock is outside.
Oh, no.
I might just have to let him in.
Podcast pause.
Pause the podcast.
Right, pick it up.
All right, let's pick it up.
I've got Shay coming in late.
Yeah. It just goes to show it's this isn't, you know, it's not a set, it's not staged. This is a real recording studio with real clients.
That was a real situation.
And would you believe, in this day and age, people turning up early? How dare they?
Where were we?
I was talking about, I said listening as a listener.
Can I pick you up on that? Well, not pick you up on that, say something. I would say, I totally agree with what you're saying. But then sometimes you do need to listen as a listener.
Yeah. 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 That was what I was saying.
There's two modes.
Yeah.
Was I just not listening to what you said?
It's time you.
Let me just reassert what you said.
Exactly. I'm going to disagree with you there and say exactly what you said as if it was a contrary point.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's good to remind yourself when you are working on the craft. Let's bring in painting as well. We've had writing.
Right.
You've got to step back and look at the painting.
Yeah.
You know? I think that's actually quite a good visual. Because when you're painting the painting, if it's a large canvas and music is a large canvas, you're up close, you're working on the details.
Mm-hmm.
Brush in hand, palette, such like. But in order to look at the big picture, in order to see the whole work, you have to step back to a distance, where you can take it all in. And in order to do that, you're kind of out of arm's reach. And I think
that's a good analogy, Dan.
You know that's
put that on your website.
Let's put that on the which I've got to renew. This week's sponsor. No,
I had an interesting day yesterday. On that point, I had an interesting day yesterday. I'm working with a really amazing artist, a young female singer, great singer, really good song. And I'm not going to say I have a way of doing vocals, but usually I find the best results go from getting people to do like performances. Hang on. Pause that. It's my artist here. Another pause.
Okay. I'm gonna try and continue the podcast on my own. Oh dear listeners, this is the cut and thrust of the modern recording industry. Stepping back and looking at the big picture, the way I like to do that is this isn't working. Because suddenly I'm just. I tried on my own.
My artist was early. My artist was literally like 10 minutes early. Okay, let's wrap this up then.
What do you think about this?
I mean, I don't listen to you anyway, so
exactly. It's fine. Yeah, listening as a listener. Make that the title of the podcast.
So usually, like the way I like to do vocals is just to try and get a performance.
Yeah, right, yeah.
However, yesterday, the artist did 25 takes.
Yeah. On their own, right?
On their own.
Yeah.
Yeah. The artist wanted to be left alone, which is like cool. Mm. Prince used to do his vocals, apparently, get one at the room. I was like, cool. And we did a kind of micro comp.
Okay.
And I must say, while we were doing it, I was like, this is just gonna fucking suck the light. We were going in.
What's a micro comp to you?
A micro comp to me is, actually it wasn't that micro, but there was a lot to listen through to.
Yeah.
There was like a lot of takes and we listened to all of them line by line.
Okay.
Even on a couple of occasions went in on some words that weren't.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Yeah.
And
yeah,
syllables
yeah.
that weren't quite
yeah.
matching up.
Yeah.
Anyway,
to some people that's going to be like,
yeah, I just
started to do that on everything.
But and as we were doing it, in the back of my mind, I was thinking, and also to say, she'd done a take. We already did have a comp.
Okay. Yeah.
That I thought was really good.
Yeah.
I thought this is great. Right. Yeah. Anyway, so we ended up doing this comp, and it took a couple of hours.
Yep.
And I was just like, so then to use our analogy, Dan, we stepped back.
Yeah.
And I pressed space bar, and I was like, this isn't going to be right.
Yeah.
It was really good.
And it was right.
It was really good. And also, I feel as a producer, mixer, as a collaborator, you know, I'm really just there to amplify whatever the artist wanted to do.
Yeah.
And the artist actually is very precise in her execution, in her writing, in her choice of words, in her choice of phrase. And when we were going through the comp, once she found something, she was like, that's it.
That's the one.
And she was right.
Okay.
And she was right. And when we listened back, it had the effect of the comp we ended with just sounded very focused, very precise. And also the backing track, the music that we were working with was also very precise and it just worked.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds like she had a very specific and clear vision.
Yeah.
I think that's probably why that worked.
Yeah, because I've done that and stepped back and zoomed out and it's been, just has had no life in it.
Yeah.
She's a very, 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 very consistent singer as well. So the difference between take one and take 25 is percentages, small percentages different. Is it, you know, because, you know, so some singers we've worked with, take one and take two can just be complete, can be their own universe, which is also cool, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that can be, I mean, I've worked certainly with some guitarists where it's like that as well. Like, you know, those guitarists who can only, whatever they play is wonderful, but you can't, you can't get them to repeat what they did.
Is Thurston more like that, Dan?
Thurston's, well, when I said that, I mean, yes, he is. But when I said that, I was thinking of an overdubbing guitarist.
Okay.
Thurston he's never been overdubbing against anything, really. Apart from, you know, when
you recorded Thurston's guitars, was it always in the room with the drums and the bass?
As part of a take.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Trying to think. I mean, yeah, I think he would want to. So the guitarist that he was working with at the time, he had a little bit of a different take on things. He was quite precise.
Yeah.
But I think, because Thurston's the artist as well, he's the engine of it. So
yeah, it's a different thing to an overdubbing guitarist. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Because if he plays it, it's right.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Exactly.
And if he plays it different on take two and take three, probably didn't, I mean, quite similar process to Laura Marling. Like, if the song doesn't want to come out in a way that, you know, that feels right after 2, 3, 4 takes, then we move on to something else.
Yeah, I mean, Laura's one of those artists that's not consistent, but it's always consistently good.
Yeah,
and every take just sounds, well, we could use this because this is great.
Exactly.
But then the next take will be different, but also authoritative, isn't, you know.
But in the same way as sort of stepping back from the painting as you're working on a specific song, I think if you are recording someone who's got that kind of free approach where different takes are different things,
it's not comparable. It's not micro comparable.
It's not comparable. For sure. But my point was going to be that sometimes it is great to just like, okay, we got three takes down there. Feels generally like there was one was the keeper, but it's great to just then like, right, let's work on another song.
Yeah, totally.
Completely. Because then when you come back and listen later,
yeah,
often best to do it the same day, I feel. You can then assess very easily,
yeah,
and very quickly. You listen to take one, take two, take three. It's taken 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And you know pretty much which one's your favorite.
Yeah.
And you know if it's a keeper or whether you've got to do it again.
Words of wisdom, Dan. That's the buzzer of destiny. My artist is here.
Okay.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
We'll see you next week.
No, we won't.
There's going to be a break. It's next week and then a break.
Next week and then a break.
Bye.
Happy recording.
Bye.